Have you been hitting the books and listening to lectures all day? It's time to relax, to unwind, and listen up. This is Brooke from Campus Chronicles, your go-to podcast for everything student life. No matter where you are in your academic journey, we have you covered. Think of us as a trusted mentor, friend, and confidant who always has your back. We'll be sharing inspiring stories, thought-provoking insights, and practical advice to help you succeed in and out of the classroom. So get ready to be inspired, enlightened, and entertained. Hello, hello, everyone. I am so excited to tell you that we have the wonderful Katie Bingner here back with us for a second episode. When we wrapped up the first episode, Katie had such an incredible idea for a second episode that I said, you must come back. So Katie, thank you for being here.
I am so excited for being here. Thank you for having me back.
Your first episode was full of so much insight, so much knowledge to share with our student viewership, and I cannot wait to see what direction we take this in. Katie wants to dissect gender and communication, which is a huge, huge task ahead of us.
You know what? It's a big topic, but I think we're going to pleasantly find that there is a pretty concise way of talking about this. And when we really kind of pull back the stereotypes, the misinformation, it does give us a lot more clarity on how to experience communication, but also how to navigate communication. And yeah, I'm really excited to jump in.
I'm so excited too. Let's dive right in. There are so many misconceptions. There's so much misconstruement around gender and communication. Those assumptions tend to pepper what we believe other people are communicating to us. Let's get started. Why do you think there are so many misconceptions around gender and communication?
I mean, the reason that happens, and I mean, this is based in the research, is primarily our cultural conditioning and our socialization and these views of traditional gender roles, right? So there are these kind of through lines throughout history that link, right, that say, hey, you know, this gender communicates this way, this gender communicates that way. We've got John Gray's, you know, men are from Mars, women are from Venus, all of that. And it really has. It seeped in long, long ago to kind of the cultural framework and the belief. And it's really stereotypes that we've adopted as fact, but it's this belief that men and women in particular communicate in specific and particularly like kind of polar opposite ways. And that is kind of then used as reasoning and foundation for why there's so much conflict in maybe cis-hetero relationships, et cetera, which is a part of why I love talking about this because, you know, I don't know if I mentioned it before, but, you know, I am the partner of a law enforcement officer. My wife she's a detective. And so the last 10 years, I've had to kind of learn about and coexist in this first responder world, which is heavily seeped in gender stereotypes, right?
And heavily seeped in masculinity.
Very much. And what's so interesting is that there is a very rich world of queer first responders. And I, you know, it's like when I'm having these conversations with other spouses and partners, the conversation is always framed in, you know, the female partner is discussing, you know, her husband and how he came, you know, and I'm like, my wife does that too. and it always kind of just picks at my brain there of like, you know, why are we constantly being pulled toward this idea? Because then the conversation broadens in those spaces of like, well, that's just how men are, et cetera, et cetera. And it just always piques my curiosity and my interest around, you know, really exploring further human experience with communication, queer experience with communication. And like, how do we make sense of that? You know, I literally asked my wife, I was like, hey, so the research kind of says that generally speaking, you know, women tend to communicate in more like rapport driven ways, right? With an empathic nature, with a focus on relationship building and more geared toward compromise and reading between the lines, whereas men, right, classically are more direct, assertive, but also analytical, rational, problem solving, and competitive in their communication. And I laid that out for her and I was like, so how do you explain you?
That is such an interesting question. And it's forcing me to consider where I fall on that spectrum. Because it is a spectrum, right? We all fall in a different spot. We are usually not in one camp or the other. But polarization makes us want to identify with one camp or the other when really it's more of a spectrum.
100%. I think if you take anything from our conversation today, I want people to really walk away understanding that all humans tend to communicate relatively consistently across the gender binary. Okay. That is what the research shows. Again, what I was referring to before, it is really highlighting like these generalizations. And I didn't go into like why that is, but the idea here is to understand that this isn't inherently based on our gender or our biological sex. It is inherently based in how we were socialized, the cultures we were brought up in, and essentially internalizing all those beliefs and stereotypes, like I mentioned before, and then kind of them evolving into this idea around fact. That's just how men are. That's just how women are. And not only does, like you mentioned before, not only does that have a lot of implications for our relationships, you know, cis-hetero relationships, but it also, it's like, well, what about all the other individuals who have the spectrum of gender identity? What about them? You know, and so we really need to kind of like broaden our perspectives and see if we can be willing to like put down the stereotypes and take a different approach to exploring and engaging in communication.
I want to dig into the stereotypes. Can you give me some examples? Let's get really, really far down the stereotype and the generalization hole, because I think that is so important to understand what stereotypes and generalizations we're talking about and additionally working against.
Right. So when we're talking about like gendered stereotypes with regard to communication, we're talking about men being in the camp, and I kind of already highlighted some of this, but men being in the camp of being seen as more assertive communicators, like somehow naturally. And they're more task-oriented, and that they are more direct in their communication, that they're less emotional, that they will be the ones that tend to kind of distance and avoid the verbalization of communication, right? Because obviously communication is multi-layered. We've got our verbals, nonverbals, paraverbals. And the assumption is that, you know, men don't want to talk. When they do talk, they're not going to speak about their emotions.
Quote unquote, men don't talk about their feelings.
Right. And then we've got the kind of the women side, the female quote unquote side of communication stereotypes, which is that women are naturally and inherently more nurturing. They prioritize the relationship building of their lives, right? They are more indirect, more passive, more appeasing. They are certainly more expressive of their emotions, right? These are all kind of those classic, really strongly held stereotypes around the gender communication phenomena.
And they're harmful as well. Why do you think separating is so harmful?
Any assumptions that we make about other people wind up being harmful to some degree. But let's just narrow the lens for the sake of our conversation today to talk about how it would be harmful with our partners, right? Because that tends to be like the most important relationship or the relationship we might value the most in our lives. And the problem here is that we basically skip over the person entirely, right?
We erase their humanity, really.
Their true identity and what's going on inside of them that is actually genuinely motivating how they're communicating. This is what's important if we actually want to communicate well, if we want to solve this problem between us, if we want to resolve the conflict, if we want to, and it's not always from the negative perspective, right? If we want to enrich our lives more, if we want to deepen our intimacy, but we just automatically are assuming that, oh, well, yeah, but so-and-so is never going to want to talk about their feelings, or, oh, of course, typical, like you just, you know, you don't have any, I bring something up and you have nothing to say in response. And of course, that was like the one perspective, typically the, right, like the female leaning quote unquote perspective. But then there's the other assumptions of like, oh, great, like you're going to want to talk about this for the next hour and you're just going to talk at me and you're going to want me to express all these feelings and, ugh. And it creates conflict, especially when the two partners do have kind of more opposite leaning communication behaviors. At the end of the day, though, we don't want to be just lumping it into, oh, it's because they are a particular gender. That doesn't get us anywhere.
No, it doesn't get you anywhere. And I think it moves you farther away from deepening your understanding. Because when we fall into these stereotypes, we don't really look deeper. We don't think that we have to.
Yeah. I mean, some of the most well-renowned linguists and researchers when it comes to, you know, language and gender highlight how there are these very obvious differences between genders, again, essentially because of how we've been trained to communicate based on our gender. But at the end of the day, what they really highlight is that the misunderstandings between people come from the differing goals, the differing communication goals that each individual has in that conversation, much more than anything related to one's gender.
That is so interesting. Something that's coming up as you're talking is, I'm sure you've read this on Instagram, women say sorry a significant amount more than men say sorry. That's one of their catchphrases, if you will. Why do you think that is?
You know, power dynamics, I think, plays a huge role. We have a long history of differing power dynamics between the gender roles, right? The traditional gender roles. And this leads to, again, the socialization, training us as individuals, as we've been raised, what our role is within the power dynamic, right? And so the idea here is that men have kind of traditionally held more powerful, dominant spaces historically. And we, interestingly enough, might say, well, we don't hear them apologize anywhere near as much as women who have historically held much less powerful positions in society. And we've each, right, everybody's developed skills, communication skills to navigate those gender imbalances. I would easily argue that one of the skill sets that women who identify as women who, you know, right, cis women would, you know, say, yeah, okay. So the over-apologizing can be directly linked to our position in society and how we have navigated that power imbalance by recognizing that if we apologize, if we submit, essentially, that can help reduce conflict. That can help keep us safe, right? That can help us, that might be the only avenue for us to actually be successful is to kind of passively navigate these obstacles and hurdles to try and find success. Whereas we might kind of stereotypically see men as kind of just like crashing down the walls, right?
And not all men, but many men.
No, absolutely. That's, again, that's the stereotype. That's the assumption.
Absolutely. So you're mentioning socialization. I love talking about socialization. It's so broad. It's so big. It's so hard to quantify. I want to go there. Let's have some examples. Let's discuss what socialization looks like. in our world today, what are you seeing in terms of our socialization?
You know, it's interesting. So socialization is really just how we learn to behave based on our family of origin, based on our peer group experiences, our communities at large, also based on our media exposure, right? And so it's essentially us learning by watching the world around us, and in particular, putting heavier weight on those who are closest to us and the world we are kind of encapsulated in as we grow up. And it's learning. It's learning all the acceptable behavior. It's learning what the expectations are of who I am apparently, who I apparently am within this context of, you know, whatever it is. For example, you know, my wife was raised in the South. She grew up in Mississippi. And when we were having this conversation, because I was mentioning to you, Brooke, that like in preparation for this conversation, because there is not really much or any research around gender fluidity. And so I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to pick my wife's brain because she identifies as, you know, a cis woman, but her gender expression is extremely androgynous. In our conversation, she was able to kind of highlight how she, her communication is gender fluid. She highlighted how throughout her life, she has learned the skills to lean into more kind of stereotypical feminine expectations of communication in order to navigate certain contexts. And also allowed what is more natural for her, which is those kind of more stereotypical masculine-leaning communication styles, to help her navigate other contexts, but also to just feel more aligned with herself, because that is the natural way that she communicates. But I was like asking her, you know, I said, but surely you were socialized growing up, right, in Mississippi, you were socialized to communicate like a stereotypical woman, right? And I was like, well, how did that, like, well, what do you think happened there? Because you must have been taught and you must have been, it must have been modeled for you, like, this is what you're supposed to, how you're supposed to behave, and this is how you're supposed to communicate and not communicate, probably, emphasis on that. And she kind of said, you know, I did learn what I was expected to do. It just never, I think I kind of figured out early on that it never felt congruent with how I would naturally communicate. So I kind of had to like learn how to appease those expectations. And that, of course, varied depending on like the context that they were in and, you know, the role models that she had. And it was just a really interesting conversation around how like socialization is such a key part of it. And also there are these inherent aspects of how we communicate that are influenced by so much outside of our gender.
So much. And with the media portion, you are bringing me to my childhood. I was a Barbie fanatic. I was a Disney princess fanatic. I was all of those things. And I think about the media that our young people are consuming now, obviously leaning more towards TikTok, Instagram, YouTube. How do you think that's going to impact communication?
Significantly, and in lots of different ways. I will say that in terms of, I think, again, this kind of highlights, and maybe this phenomena, this kind of generational experience with kind of short content, the inundation, information, and we'll just call it information, regardless of how reliable it is or not, and that's shaping how we are being socialized, right? Because now we are not just being socialized by our immediate world. And one could argue that we're being way more influenced by the globalized kind of communication of it all, right?
And I would agree with anybody that would argue that.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to kind of deny that, right? The level of access, the amount
And the culture sharing is just huge.
Yeah, the amount of experience we're getting across cultures, just learning about one another is pretty vast. And so it's definitely making an impact. And arguably, perhaps in both directions, we could easily say that having access to things like TikTok, Instagram, et cetera, are helping us break down a lot of these stereotypes, let go a lot of them, because we are accessing information, or we're at least seeing individuals that are more representative of who we seem to resonate with. And right, kind of say, oh, well, wait a minute. You know, I was taught that I needed to be kind of a demure, quiet, polite young lady. But, you know, I'm seeing plenty of people on TikTok that kind of look like me and share the same ideas and values as me. And they're communicating much differently. They're expressing themselves in much more, you know, extroverted, loud, proud ways, right? So, wow, there's possibility there. And I think that those kind of traditional gender role stereotypes are going to have a difficult time hanging on. And then also particularly because we are experiencing more of awareness that there is such gender fluidity. Binaries are kind of antiquated. I think a lot of the newer generations are recognizing that binaries are kind of an antiquated way to look at the world and the way to look at people. People are so complex. And I think that the younger generations appreciate that more than any before.
Something that the younger generation does very well is see humans as humans. I admire that. And I do think that they've done very well at deconstructing the way that they communicate. And I want to bring up as well, although we've talked primarily romantic, this could be platonic. This could be something that you use in the workplace. So there are so many applications for deconstructing this communication and what you've always held on to. If you're feeling called to deconstruct that in any area of your life, we highly encourage you to consider it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. One of the little fun little bits of of research that I came across was kind of talking about the competence questioning behaviors that we see primarily in the workplace, right? Like the mansplaining of it all, the ignoring, the interrupting.
Being afraid to send a follow-up email is something a lot of women will struggle with.
Right, yes. And spend arguably maybe too much time obsessing over the little details.
I can't apply for this job. I don't meet every criteria.
Right, right. Did I put too many exclamations? I've got to redo it. You know,
I can't use an emoji. There's so much that has even gone through my head that I know is going through everyone's head when they're applying for internships for work study positions.
Yeah, yeah. And let's think about that for a second, right? It's like these assumptions, these ideas then wind up really hindering, right? Putting up these, again, these huge barriers that we might not even realize are coming from these much greater cultural phenomena that wind up impacting how we lead our life, right? If you don't apply for that thing that you really want to try to get, that's going to change the trajectory of your life in some way, you know, versus if you do. And it's so interesting because we've come so far, and also it's all still rooted in us. You know, we've got generational residue, so to speak, that still sits with us and really highly influences how we go about interacting, communicating. And like you said, if we go for particular goals in our lives, if we, you know, the choices that we make, the paths that we take, it's all heavily still influenced by all these kind of gendered stereotypes.
If somebody wants to do better, if they want to learn, if they want to become more aware, where do they start?
I will say that I think, so as a communication coach, one of the primary pieces of work that I do is kind of along this line, right? People come to me with these bigger kind of concerns or issues or struggles, and our work is to narrow it down to more tangible kind of practical ways to make change. And so one fantastic step to take is just starting to attune and notice when a stereotype might be kind of influencing your perspective in that moment, right? see if you can be mindful to catch those assumptions. And at the very least, see if you can kind of loosen your grip on them, right? Kind of instead maybe focus on the person in front of you, what they're doing, what they're saying, and recognize that there might be kind of like these stereotypical assumptions, beliefs, ideas that are floating around nearby, but you're going to kind of in that moment do your best to just take the information that's in front of you and go from there, right? So you're being more mindful and you're being more curious rather than kind of jumping to conclusions and assumptions.
Right. It's the next best thing. And when a problem is so big, it feels difficult to tackle. It feels insurmountable. You don't really know how to get started. But I love that that's very tangible and actionable.
Yeah, that's, I mean, and I always tell all my clients, like, and I think this is something that people hear a lot, which is that you have to notice something before you can change it. And so getting started making changes to these behaviors, a lot of times people are like, you know, like, how do I stop? Right. And it's kind of like, well,
you're not going to stop overnight, and that's okay. No one expects you to.
Right. It's really like a counterintuitive almost approach for a lot of people where they're like geared up to kind of like change something. And it's kind of like, oh, well, first we slow down. First we try to notice. First we try to kind of pay attention to what we're already doing and just see if we can, again, just kind of loosen our grip on those behaviors that we've kind of gotten attached to before we maybe even take any other action. I would also emphasize from that point, really leaning into active listening skills, being able to either activate that if you have them or do some work learning, you know, how to really effectively listen to the person that's in front of you, get really curious about what they're saying, recognize that it's okay that their communication style is probably different than your communication style. We don't have to label it as good or bad. I certainly have been guilty of that. I can't tell you how many times.
I've also been guilty of that.
Of course, it's normal. It is. We're human. And especially in the most important relationships. I mean, early on in our marriage, I could go on and on about it. I won't. But the idea that because I'm more communicative, because I'm more expressive with my emotions, I assumed my communication style was the better one. And so then the default then is that, oh, well, then her communication style is bad. You're doing it wrong. And if you just learned how to do it like me, then things would go much better. And we get really rigid around those ideas. But if we loosen our grip around those behaviors and ideas, and we start to actively listen, get curious, ask open-ended questions, you know, when we are listening, pay attention to the details.
Don't zone out. Don't scroll on your phone.
Oh, no, big no-no. Put your phone down. You're not communicating well at all, regardless of your gender, if you've got your phone up. But sometimes with my clients, I'll even say, like, if you have a hard, there are plenty of people in this world who have a really hard time being able to retain what they've heard. That's okay. That's not a fault of yours. It might be how you're neurobiologically wired. You know, neurodivergent individuals might struggle with this in particular. But so there's nothing wrong. Don't use your phone. But because that's, you know, that holds other, you know, context. But bring a piece of paper and notice the details, jot it down. When someone in front of you says that they've been really frustrated, maybe just write down frustrated. Maybe that's enough to help you hold on to the content that they're really trying to communicate so that you can really take it in and pay attention to it and then engage as best you can.
You know, they teach news reporters to repeat back parts of what they heard as an active listening because it's very hard to retain that information. And I notice myself, sometimes I still do that. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. But it is just a way to retain on that biological level and feel it in your body.
Reflective listening, right, is what we call that, right? I do that all the time. It not only it helps it kind of digest and internalize for us, but it also verbalizes, right? It puts it out there and it helps the person who was speaking acknowledge, like, okay, yeah, you got that right. Mm-hmm. Right. It's all about the clarity at that point. It's, yes, you got that right. Or, you know, no, that's not exactly what I meant. And then you're able to deduce and get to the clearer elements of the communication. And so it's, yeah, I mean, I guess I would kind of start there. That's probably plenty.
That is so much. So, Katie, I'm going to ask you another really challenging question. If you were going to give university students three pieces of advice around gender, around communication, whatever you're feeling led to share, what would those three pieces of advice be?
Let's see. One maybe would be to allow yourself the freedom to explore how you communicate, and letting how you communicate be okay, with the understanding that we can always improve our communication because they are behaviors. Behaviors can be adjusted, but there's also some inherent, right, individualized ways that we communicate that in part represent who we are. And in part that, you know, some of our communication style represents our personality. I know. Right. And so it's a way that we express ourselves authentically. And even though there are a lot of people in this world who, right, who have to resort to like masking and all these other kinds of alterations to the way they communicate, I would really encourage people to just give yourself some space to allow yourself to investigate, be curious, and genuinely communicate the way that feels right to you. And then maybe just start to pick up on like how that's working, right? Because that might need to change depending on the context, right? Or the relationship. But having like a good foundation of how you really inherently communicate, I think is a great place to start, just for a sense of true identity and authenticity, but also helps us then learn how to adapt and navigate in different situations. Also, let's see, maybe going back to I'll say getting curious and maybe taking some time to reflect on how you were taught. Maybe even like sitting down and doing like a single journal entry can give you a lot of insight. How did your family of origin communicate? Like, what was the general perspective or core beliefs around communication? What was then modeled for you? What kind of communication were you praised for and rewarded for? What kind of communication were you punished for or you know, encouraged not to engage in? That gives us also a lot of information about what we might be struggling with in the present when it comes to our communication. If we're getting into a lot of conflicts, or if we are finding that we are kind of shrinking in our relationships and becoming maybe more passive, or we've just always struggled with more passivity and we want to find a way to be, you know, more, take more ownership of our communication and our wants and needs. I think that's a great place to start, is kind of exploring, well, where did we come from? Oh, and then number three, gosh, maybe setting a goal for yourself to, and this is particularly for those who find that they are communicating most of the time online. So if most of your communication, most of your interaction is happening in the DMs and on the comments and all that stuff, and with just like, you know, not face-to-face, maybe set a goal to start kind of branching out a little bit, even just like to, you know, incorporate, dare I say it, phone calls.
Yeah. And then you can graduate to eye contact.
Yeah, you can maybe throw in, yeah, some face-to-face stuff. And keep in mind that if in-person face-to-face communication is anxiety triggering for you, if it's uncomfortable, there are these different methods and ways that you can start incorporating it into your life in a more manageable way. One of the best ways that I like to suggest is, suggest if you want to meet up with someone in person, but you tend to isolate or just like not, you kind of avoid the in-person interactions, maybe go for a walk. Because when we're engaging in something like walking, we're side by side. So it really minimizes like the face-to-face intensity of looking at someone in the eye. And
mm-hmm. You can get your beautiful body moving. You're not thinking as hard.
Right. And there's also kind of like this acceptability around there can be silence when we're walking, right? We're also doing this thing, we're looking around. We don't have to constantly be talking and filling the space. Whereas it's like, oh, well, the only idea I've thought about is inviting people to coffee. But then I think, well, what if there's like a dead silence and awkward silence?
And then they're staring at me across the table with their coffee.
And I will not survive that. So no, right? And so, or we become obsessive and we like Google things to like, you know, conversation continuers. Doing something that is also engaging you in another maybe physical activity has this way of kind of like easing that tension and giving you the opportunity to have in-person communications and interactions, but like less pressure to perform.
Oh, I love these, Katie. You showed up and you showed out with your three tips and your three strategies. Those were incredible. If people are inspired by you, they want to find you, they want to know more about you, where can they do that?
So you can reach out to me through my website, katiebingner.com. All my services are listed there. I am a mental health provider as well as, but that's of course in the state of Maryland in the US. I'm also a communication coach and I can work with anybody anywhere for that. As you can tell, I'm pretty passionate about communication. And so if that's of interest, please reach out. I'm also a little bit on TikTok. I have a free communication skills group on Facebook. I'm also on Instagram at Katie B Coaching. And before we wrap, I do want to mention that because I want to put it out there that for anybody who's listening who is LGBTQIA2S+, there is currently a study being conducted by Stanford University School of Medicine, and it is the largest scale long-term national health study of queer people. And so I don't know if they are looking outside the country, but I think it's worth giving it a try and seeing if those outside of the US can participate, because at the end of the day, we need data. We need information on the queer community's physical, mental, and social health. And this study is really dedicating a lot of time and effort and energy to gathering that information. So I'm participating in the study, and I really encourage anybody else who identifies as queer.
Oh my goodness. Thank you so much for sharing. And Katie, thank you so much for coming on. You shared so many incredible insights, so many wonderful things. And the conversation took a fantastic and terrific direction. So I'm so pleased with how it turned out and so grateful that you joined us for another episode of the Campus Chronicles podcast.
Thank you for joining me on Campus Chronicles. I hope you found our discussion informative, inspiring, entertaining, and fun. We are always working hard to make sure that our episodes are the very best they can be, which means we need your help. If you liked what you heard, remember to hit the follow button on your favorite podcast platform and drop us a review. It helps us to connect with more students who are hungry for success. And remember, the journey never stops. Keep listening, keep learning, keep growing. See you next week for another amazing episode of Campus Chronicles.